Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Tammy Ryan, prolific Pittsburgh playwright. How's that sound?
That's hard to say. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, but you can write that down. You can use that. You know, royalty free. How's that?
Thank you.
We are here in your lovely home. Thank you for having me as a guest. You know, what our viewers don't know is that I had to fib to you and tell you I was doing a feature for Town & Country magazine to get in here. Really, I just wanted to see Tammy Ryan's house. And it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I was hoping, though, for, you know, something dimly lit, you know, just a manuscript stacked up to the ceiling, you know, one little candle.
But that's upstairs.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. We'll go there afterwards. That's fantastic. One thing that I've always been envious of writers, playwrights in particular, is that they can write anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's a job you can do from just about anywhere in the world. Right. So why Pittsburgh?
Right. Well, I'm from New York originally, and I met my husband, who is an air traffic controller.
Oh, wow.
Larry Mercurio. I met him in Buffalo, where I was doing undergrad.
Now, that kind of sounds like that could be a play.
He came to Pittsburgh. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I've written one play that had an air traffic controller in it, but it really wasn't about him.
Where did you possibly go to get the, you know, source material
right.
on that, though?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was, I tried to tell people that it wasn't about him, but then, like, things would pop up, and I said, well, yeah, that was kind of true. And
subconsciously.
Yeah, that was kind of true. But it was called Dark Part of the Forest. Mm. And I did it in 2000 at the Hamburg Studio in City Theater.
Oh.
And it's published now, so people can read it if they want.
And they must have the poster of it still hanging like they do, right?
No, City Theater didn't actually do it. It was like an artist, independent artist program where it was Mark Masterson was the artistic director, and he helped me produce it myself there. So, and Nancy Bach was in it.
Yeah.
And, who else was in it? Megan Lawrence, which you might know from Playboy.
Yes, I do remember. Megan Mackenzie Lawrence, I think Mackenzie was
her
name before.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Great actress.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a nice production. It was great. So the main character was an air traffic controller. But then it got dark. You know, then it wasn't true.
In the Tammy Ryan story, mm-hmm. first of all, who would play you, do you think?
Oh, maybe... Ed Harris's wife. What's her name?
Ed Harris's wife.
Yeah.
I'm looking for like an A-lister here. Over Ed Harris's wife.
She's a famous actress. I can't remember her name now.
Someone's Googling it. They already know. Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind like playing Ed Harris's wife. Yeah, that'd be okay.
So where does the Tammy Ryan story open then? Say Act One, Scene One, New York.
Mm-hmm. Astoria, Queens. Mm. I'm the oldest of six kids.
Wow.
The Ryans. My father was a moving man. He worked in a warehouse for this company called Obie's.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking maybe he was a dancer.
No.
What kind of moves are we talking about?
And he's alive. He's very charming, you know, liked his Budweiser and so I grew up with, and I had a sort of large extended family in Queens, and we would have, you know, parties and, family dinners and everybody talking at once and a lot of colorful characters. And so I developed an ear for dialogue.
Ah, there you go.
That way, you know, so it was lucky I I found theater to kind of put all that in there. So,
It was meeting your husband, the air traffic controller, that brought you to Pittsburgh?
To Pittsburgh, right. So we met in Buffalo, and he was an air traffic controller there, and we were looking for a city you know, to live in. And Pittsburgh had a great airport at the time. And so I followed him, and I applied to Carnegie Mellon at the same time and did my MFA there in playwriting. So the plan was really to leave, you know, like in a couple of years and go someplace like, you know, where playwriting was sort of happening. At that time, Seattle was pretty big, and or Minneapolis was another choice, or Chicago. But it was a good place for him, his job, and since he was the main, you know, wage earner, we kind of hung around, and then we bought a house, and then we had kids, and then before you know it, I was here. But one of the good things about, like at the time, it was kind of a desert here, theater-wise. I mean, certainly for new writing. But it seemed like a theater community kind of grew around me. And in the last 20 years, there's been, you know, so many changes in Pittsburgh. It's really become, well, you know, it's become this great place where people want to, a lot of artists are coming here.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people from Brooklyn. You know, it's kind of nice to for that, you know. So.
And you've certainly been a part of it. I mean, I hear your name all the time. I see it on playbills quite often. So you are working a lot in Pittsburgh.
I've been busy. It's been a good place for me to write. And, you know, I have a lot of supporters here. And one of the best resources, actually, in Pittsburgh are the actors. So as a playwright, you can't do anything without actors. And I've been really... you know, blessed. I love actors, and they help me develop my plays. I do readings, and you know, they give me their time and their talent, and I often write roles with specific actors in mind because I you know, I know that person can play that. In recent play, Soldier's Heart, one character, Jamie Slavinsky. I was thinking of her for that role, and she originated the role, and so that was. That was great too.
What do you feel was your first great success as a playwright?
Probably my play Pig, which was done. I wrote it at CMU, and but people, I didn't really get a good response from it there. So it's a little strange. I mean, I call it my dysfunctional family play. And I wrote a series of these dysfunctional family plays from Queens plays, and that Pig was the first one. And, you know, loosely based on events in with my family.
Now, did they ever come see these shows?
They did see Pig.
Oh, Morty, that's you! No, that's Larry!
Well, you know, I tried to... It was done in New York, and it was done a couple times, actually, in New York. And one of them, my uncle was an actor, and he was... So he did a lot of like Law and Order and a lot of movies.
When you're an actor in New York, do Law and Order,
So somehow this small theater company was going to do it, and they ended up casting him in the role of the father, who is based on my father.
So wow, that's cool.
I kept trying to tell them, this is not autobiography, you know, this is fiction. And he kept telling them stories about my dad, who he adores and idolized, you know, he's his older brother. And he would tell them, you know, like, oh, Roger is a great guy, and, you know, tell him. And I'm saying, it's not about him, you know, because the character of Jack is a little... he's a little dark. He, you know, it's a black comedy. It's an Irish... play in a way. Like, I didn't realize I was writing in the same spirit of people like Martin McDonagh and you know, Conor McPherson. Maybe, I mean, I'm not comparing myself to them at all, but when I went to Ireland and saw my first Martin McDonagh play, I went, it was Lonesome West, and I said, oh, now I understand why my first impulse was to write plays like Pig. So they saw the play, and the actress came up to my mom and said, so how much of this is true? And she said, well, you know, Roger quit smoking and the dog's name was Elmo.
And that's it.
That was all she said. I was like, you're not helping.
But it seems to me that it can be a tough business to break into.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, how did you even get to the level of that first production of Pig?
Well, you know, being lucky, being persistent. Putting yourself out there, trying. I mean, and all these things. So there's no straight line, you know. As I tell my daughter, who's going into the music world, like there's no straight line in a creative path, as you know. So I sent that play to a theater called 29th Street Rep. I sent them a different play. Mm. And they wrote back and said, well, we think this is a very well-made play and we kind of like it. But this is the kind of theater that we're doing. And they showed me Killer Joe by Tracy Letts. And so I read it and I was like, oh, okay, I got one. It's called Pig. And so I sent them Pig and they did it. And so It had a nice run in New York, a good review in the Times. I got an agent from that. And then Pittsburgh became more interested in me because I had that New York production. So, but, you know, really, I feel like I'm coming to a sort of a tipping point now because my plays are starting to get done more widely nationally. But it's just from, you know, showing up in the room every day and being persistent. And, like, you know, the last person standing is usually the one who's still getting their plays done.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, persevere.
How essential is an agent?
Well, it's not essential. In fact, most of my plays and my gigs that I get and bring to her, and she like in other words, they don't get work for you, but they negotiate contracts. They sort of keep track of my books. Like so when a play is done, like the Playhouse, they get a certain percentage if they mm-hmm. did the world premiere. Like I can't keep track of that. Who needs to get those subsidiary rights? Yeah. So I really rely on my agent to just kind of take care of that money stuff. Not that there's millions to deal with, but you know, I couldn't keep track of it.
Well, that's enough for me to feel that they're essential.
Yeah. I mean, I feel lucky that I have an agent. She's a good agent. So,
how do you define your style as a writer? Or do you?
Yeah, no. Well, I don't know. I leave that to other people to kind of decide. But I try, because I write different kinds of plays. Like sure. I have my Dysfunctional Family from Queens plays, which I've recently gone back to with a play called Tar Beach that was just done in New Jersey. I get done in New Jersey a lot, which I find kind of interesting. I think they're hearing that sort of New York voice.
Yeah.
And those plays kind of just bubble up out of me, and I have to write them, you know, probably for my psychological health. And then there are other plays that sort of come to me, like Lost Boy Found in Whole Foods, which is a play that it's been done. It's done again at the Playhouse and elsewhere, about the boys of Sudan, the lost boys of Sudan. I had worked with, I don't know if you knew Ronnie Ostfield. She had a theater called Playback Theater, and I did a project with her and Catholic Charities with these guys from Sudan. And so I used to do these sort of outreach projects. I guess you would call them devised theater now.
Yeah.
Where people would tell their stories and I would write down what they say and then craft it into a play. So once I met them and learned about them, and then they built Whole Foods around the corner, and I went in there and I saw some Sudanese young men working there, and I knew, I know what their story is. And this guy was giving this woman a papaya, and he said this in Africa, this was my favorite. I was like, I'm gonna have to write that.
Yeah.
It's gonna have to be a play. So, and then other plays are commissions and or adaptations. Like the one I'm having reading on June 15th is Molly's Hammer, and that's an adaptation of a book called Hammer of Justice by Leanne Ellison Norman, who's a local writer, about Molly Rush. So those tend to be about sort of strong women who... I have another play about Joan of Arc, and I have another play about Grania O'Malley, the pirate queen.
Mm.
So I sort of like to write about, you know, strong, uncompromising women.
Mm.
So Molly's Hammer would fit in that category.
Do you consider yourself a strong, uncompromising woman?
You will have to ask my husband, my controller, about that.
That's great. But now, right now, when you look back at some of your earliest mm-hmm. work, do you see how you've maybe changed mm-hmm. as a writer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I've become a better storyteller. And gotten better with structure.
Mm.
I mean, just on a craft level. I think that, well, I started writing about plays about myself, you know, and about my family, and I think I've sort of expanded outward. But I don't think about it too much. It's more like the next play that kind of comes to me. Mm. I tend to write in pairs. Like, so I'll have two projects that want me to write it at the same time. And they sort of come up together, and one informs the other. Like Tar Beach, I was also writing Soldier's Heart at the same time. They deal with some of the same themes. And I forgot what you asked me. Oh yeah, how it's changed. So yeah, I've gotten better.
Well, that's good. You're going in the right direction then. That's important, I think. So you've got some projects coming up relatively soon. I think you said on the 14th?
June 15th.
June 15th, yeah. A reading. Yeah. And this was a commissioned work. So this will be seated with actors reading it for the first time for an audience?
Yes. And if I said it was commissioned, I revised that. It's not a commission. It's actually it's an adaptation of the book. And I think of it as a commission because I actually got an Investing in Pittsburgh Professional Artists Region grant from Heinz Endowment and the Pittsburgh Foundation to write the first draft, which I did last year. And I had a reading at Bricolage in the Raw series for that. And now Unseen Shakespeare is interested in developing it. And they hope to produce it next summer.
Wonderful.
So this reading is going to be at the Studio Theater at the University of Pittsburgh. And Robin Abramson is playing Molly.
Wonderful.
And Michael Fuller is playing Bill Rush, her husband. And Ken Bolden is playing Daniel Berrigan, who is an activist priest who is involved with the Plowshares 8. I haven't said much about the story because it's a layered one. A lot of people know Molly Rush, and if you don't know Molly Rush, you should come see the play and you'll find out about Molly Rush. Mm-hmm. So Ken plays that role in all the other characters. Wow. So it's a three-hander.
And then after this, we go in a bit of a musical direction, don't we?
Right. So my new opera, A New Kind of Fallout, is going to have its world premiere at Summerfest at Opera Theatre of Pittsburgh.
So this is the first time that you've written an opera?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
It's my first libretto. I didn't write the opera, it's the libretto.
Which is the words that are spoken rather than sung, is that correct?
Or it's all sung.
Okay,
all
so...
Sung. So the libretto is like the story, the characters, and the words, you know.
That
get sung.
Okay, yeah. Now in an opera, they don't necessarily have to rhyme like a musical, do they?
No, not like a musical, but rhyme helps, you know, and because... one of the things I discovered is that it's hard to understand opera singers because I didn't know much about opera when I was asked to do this. This was a commission from Jonathan Eaton, and everything you sing, like, it takes three times longer to sing it than to say it.
Yes,
you know. And so since I write a lot of plays, I have like the play time sort of built in me. Like my plays usually run about 100 minutes, a minute a page. I kind of know how long things are going to be, but I didn't have that sense with the opera. If I would have wrote a regular play, so it would be like 8 hours long.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to try to learn how to write a whole full-length story short, you know. And I'm working with composer Gilda Lyons, who is, you know, a fantastic composer. And she really helped me a lot because and she had a hand in, we created the treatment together. And after I wrote the first draft, which was kind of a muted play, she took it and helped me shape it into like, okay, here you would have, you know, an aria, here would be the chorus, here would be an ensemble, here would be whatever. So sort of almost like paint by numbers kind of thing, which made it easy. So I learned a lot about it in that way. And she wanted me to write it long so she could shape it. Like she said, don't worry about repetition, I'll take care of that. And although I did a little bit of that, but I couldn't, you know, I don't know what the music is gonna sound like. So that was the big struggle, you know? So I sort of had this sort of fake opera singing in my head when I would write it.
So yeah, that's an interesting process then. So how this new opera was built is that you wrote the words.
Yeah, right.
And then the composer looked at that and said, well, this is how it should sound to music.
Right.
That's how it
went. Right. She said it to music. And so she said, and then she like shaped it as it went along. So, you know, it's a story that I wrote. It's the characters I wrote and most of the words that I wrote, that some changes that she would need to make. Also, like, English is not a great language for opera because there's not a lot of vowels compared to
Italian.
It is
a little jarring when I hear an English opera. Yeah. It's almost a little silly.
Yeah, right.
And maybe it's just because it just seems more of a heightened art when it's in a language that I don't fluently understand. It could be that. But
Well, my opera singing daughter, she thinks singing in English is, you know, sometimes, same thing you said, you know. But but you have a choice to choose a word that has an open vowel versus one that has a closed vowel. Sometimes, you know, so I tried to do that. Repetition, again, and sort of slant rhyme helps, too. And it's all about trying to get people to hear it, to hear the story. You
know, and this is the story of Rachel Carlson, right?
Well, it's inspired by Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. It's not about Rachel Carson. Originally, it was going to be, but the estate is very protective of her story and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I'm going to get sued if I try to write about Rachel Carson because we couldn't get the rights. So I decided to write about the book, Silent Spring, which, if you don't know about it, it's a sort of scientific look at what pesticides and DDT in particular is doing to the environment. It's really, it's a scientific work, but it's also really beautifully written. She was also a wonderful writer. So I write about a woman in 1962 when Silent Spring first came out. It was serialized in Life magazine. So she reads this. She's a newlywed. She's newly pregnant, and she becomes sort of radicalized when she reads the book. And her husband is an advertising executive in a chemical company. And of course, the chemical companies were involved in the backlash against Rachel Carson when the book came out. So it sets up a conflict. And so she wants to know what's going on, what's in these chemicals, which they call the miracle compound. And he's writing jingles for, you know, to sell this stuff, and her town is going to be sprayed, as they did, you know, like the spray trucks used to come down, kids playing in the, you know, the DDT clouds, and or from airplanes, right? There's a section in Silent Spring which she talks about an airplane coming and covering women's gardens, and, you know, kids playing, and people waiting at the train station, stuff like that. So that happens, and so that sort of you know, the engine of the story is her wanting to try to stop this, and she eventually takes the company to court. So
world premiere this summer
with
Opera Theater Summerfest. We're looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you feel is the greatest compliment that somebody could possibly give you after having seen your work?
People have said it to me, and I guess this is what sort of keeps you going when, you know, because it's not all, you know, martinis and tuxedos. Someone who's not in the theater comes up to me and says, "You've changed my life."
Wow.
And that to me is like, okay, then that's the reason why I wrote that play for that person.
That's tough to beat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, about your process, when it's something that, you know, you might not necessarily have been asked to do, but it's a story that's, you know, coming from within you that you're deciding to sit down and write, what is your approach? Do you just kind of start from beginning to end? Is it in pieces?
Yeah.
And then it's going back and filling in holes and things? Or is it different every time?
Every play kind of has its own way that it wants to be born and be written. But I usually start with a notebook, journaling. A lot of free writing, a lot of sort of exploratory. Usually, I'll have an idea of what I want the play to kind of be about, like a feeling. You know, so I'm really writing towards a feeling. I don't try to articulate it too much because I want it to be organic. You know, I don't want to. So I spend a long time in that kind of phase. Edward Albee would talk about being with play and walking along the beach and imagining the whole play in his head, and then he would just write it with no revisions.
I like that.
I don't believe that, but it is kind of like that. I live with the story for a long time. But when I do sit down to start to write the first draft, I need to do it like from beginning to end, like, and that's all I'm going to be doing until I finish. And lately I've been going to writing residencies for 2 weeks at a time to draft the first drafts. Like, I just did a rewrite of Molly's Hammer, and it was just at Virginia Center for the Creative Arts. where I've been a couple times to draft plays. Or I'll make a residency at home.
There you go.
I have a big dry erase board in there where everybody's schedule's on there, and I'll put like a big red boundary. Okay, this is when mommy's writing. Okay, don't bother her. You have to cook. You have to clean. You have to. That doesn't always work as well. But And then I'll have the first draft, which is the hardest part to write for me. And then I'll usually show it to my husband. Larry will read it, or maybe Sheila. I'll show it to Sheila McKenna, who's a good friend, and she's directed a lot of my plays, and then have a reading, and then usually around that time I call up Tammy Dixon at Bricolage, and they'll let me have a reading at their space, and then the process kind of continues: rewriting, reading, rewriting, reading, production, rewriting, send it out.
You've got it down to a science, yeah. Kind of these days. Indeed, there's so many articles, about American theater today. You either hear it being praised, it's living, or that it's dying, mm-hmm. But it's going somewhere. And do you feel that you're having to adapt to keep up with it?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't feel that way.
That, I think, is a good thing.
I think there's a lot. I mean, I know that there's, all the immersive theater and devised theater and ensemble and different kinds of theater and the web and all of that and film, and I'm really kind of creatively austere. I'm a dinosaur. I'm just a playwright. I mean, I'm not just a playwright. I do other things.
But, did you use a typewriter to write your plays?
Yeah.
How? Because I'm thinking I would have to go back and like correct things all the time.
Oh no, I'm a good typist. Yeah. I was a secretary before I went to college, so I was a fast typist. So, yeah. There's a lot of new writing, new playwriting happening. We're still out there. We're still getting our plays done, and I think the American theater right now is really at a very exciting and vital stage. And I have a lot of playwrights friends, friends from all over the country, and their work inspires me. And so we're all still doing it. I don't think we're dead.
Great.
Yeah,
so. Certainly not.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to that,
okay.
As a matter of fact. And to having you here with us in Pittsburgh, it's really wonderful. You light up our theatrical scene.
Oh, thank you.
Isn't it an exciting place to be for theater? I was just talking to a friend last night from D.C. Mm-hmm. I said, you've got to come up. There's so much that you won't be able to get it all in a week.
Yeah, that's what's happening now. You can't see everything.
Well, tell me about it. being on Berg Vivant, we try to cover all the shows. Yeah. And. Mm-hmm. Can barely get around to them. But I do think we're going to send somebody to the Fallout show.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
I think one of our reviewers is available for that.
Well, the music is astounding. And like what you're saying about singing in English, I think that the music is it's modern in a way, but it also recalls some like 1962, that period in some ways.
I think where it gets to be a little garish is when something's adapted into English from another language, and it just doesn't fit. This you've clearly carefully constructed in English with the vowels and consonants in consideration.
And Laura Lynn Petrill, who's singing the main role, she is astounding. She is astounding. Every time I hear her at the workshop, she becomes more and more that role. And I mean, she has a tremendous voice, and that's worth the price of admission. And of course, the great Rob Frankenberry is musical director.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I think we're going to actually have him on the show later this month.
Oh, yeah. Good.
But this must be a really exciting experience for you. I know as a playwright, to see your work come alive, but to see it put to music
must almost be
doubly exciting.
Right. And I never thought I would do that. So yeah, it is. It is. It's great. And I really like opera. It's because it's big. It's large. It can contain, if my plays are done badly or not right, they can be like melodrama, but there's room for that in opera.
Mm-hmm.
Where it expands and it's...
And you can overact horribly and get away with it. That's why I love opera.
It's great.
That's why opera's employed me from time to time. So I hear you.
Yeah.
I do. Well, we are looking forward to it. That's wonderful. Congratulations on all that you do. That's fantastic. I had a wild idea for a company, like a business that would... Mm-hmm. Like if you wanted to give like a really extravagant gift to somebody, this theater company would take the information about their life story and Mount, like the life story of Flo. And with actors and set, I mean, it would cost thousands of dollars, but you know, if it was like for someone's retirement or like a big like 60th birthday. And they would also publicize it like a legitimate show, and it would be open to the public. Isn't that a great idea?
I think it's a brilliant idea, and I've actually thought about that. But I didn't think of it. I didn't think it in terms of like productions. I thought I would write monologues for people.
Well, right, and on the spot, like because there have been a lot of theater projects where it's like quick, you know, oh, give me your life story and let's improv. But really take it to the full length. Like, listen, my dad's retiring. We want to do something. Well, tell us about his life story, and we'll get the actors.
That's a great idea.
You know, and tell. Do you want it to be a comedy? Do you want it to be like a sullen drama, or a little bit of both? Like, how do you want the tone to be?
Family,
right? And you've got a cast of actors that do it, and it can run for as long as you know they want to invest in it.
Yeah.
And I think you could have a season that would be annual because enough people would be buying into this. I think Pittsburgh needs that. Let's do it.
All right.
What would we call it? Your show of shows.
Family theater dysfunctional.
So you automatically assume they're dysfunctional.
Well, aren't we all?
Well, there does have to be drama. See, that's the thing. Because what if you got a client where it's like, her life is just so boring.
Well, that's the thing. They'll just tell you the happy things. You know, everything is great. So.
That is an experience. I think we need to let's talk to your agent and about you know what we need to do to copyright this. That'd be fantastic.
What? In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.